Hi, this is Kashish. Welcome to a new episode of Business Odyssey.
Hello, we are Lakshmi and Lauren, partners in the journeys of building communities of practice. Thank you for joining us, where we focus on exploring the human-centric approach while we consider all the variables that affect it, from the learning and development, performance, change processes, leadership and coaching, diversity and inclusion, and other key topics as well.
Today, we are joined by Diana Nydig, an Agile Transformational Coach, who will share her experience and learnings regarding using different hacks when creating, implementing, and improving people, teams, and company. Happy learning.
Let's go to the interview now.
Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. Thank you for being here, Diana, with us. We are happy to join us in our podcast. So what about if you introduce yourself a little?
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. I'm very complimented. So I'm Diana Nydig. I work at a financial firm in the United States on the East Coast outside of Philadelphia. I have been there for a long time. And so what I tell people as I'm explaining my career is that I've worked in psychology in a corporation for close to 20 years now, but I've done it in very different roles. So I started helping people with 401k plans. I went into marketing and I helped advisors figure out why our products were the best ones for their clients. Using psychology to get them to understand as well as purchase. I wound up being a web usability researcher for a while, using straight psychology and methods of research to figure out how to make sure our website works for the user. I did advertising for a while, again, helping people figure out that the products that we make are the best and then moving them into purchase. So all psychology, kind of that pull through. And what had happened was, is that I wound up being in charge of a bunch of different strategies for marketing. So advertising and search and email and website marketing and all the different various disciplines. But what was happening is, instead of doing execution strategy, I wound up with a lot of programs as to how to make the organization better at those things. And so I did a lot of research that said, here's stage one. And here's stage four, this is best in class, and we are a two or a three. And in order to get us over, here's the plan. I'm gonna do this with leaders. I'm gonna do this from a technology perspective. I'm gonna do this from an upskilling perspective. And I had about three of those plans. So the company I work for decided that they were gonna go through actually two transformations at the same time. One was what we call new ways of working. And so that's the transformation that brings in agile, it brings in human-centered design, it modernizes. Our mission is to modernize the way we think, work, and lead as we do that. The second transformation that marketing, where I worked, was doing was in fact upskilling the disciplines themselves and becoming experts in the field. So those two things combined, we put together a group of about 12 coaches with one manager and then another manager kind of overseeing the whole thing about 3 years ago now. So they asked, based on the work I was already doing in marketing, they asked me to join. And from there, I got a bunch of certifications in Agile and kind of upskilling myself in coaching and things like that so I could become better at the craft. And that leads me to where I am today. So today I was the coach and now I'm actually managing the coaches that work on the marketing transformation.
Okay, thank you for that introduction.
Yeah.
So it's been quite a journey. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. And so, a really cool one. Yeah. So, and I make a point to kind of share each piece of that, my career, because I really pull on all of it at the end of the day. So I wind up pulling on usability because I want the experience to be the best it can be for those that I'm transforming. I actually did a stint with learning and development at one point through my master's program, and I use that all day long. I use adult human behavior all day long. So each of those pieces of my career really did shape the coach that I am today. In a, like, I'm really grateful that I had done all those things before coming into the role, because I have a lot of different tools to pull on.
Mm-hmm. Great. So right now I have two questions. Yeah. The first one could be a cool sound, maybe like an interview question for a job.
Sure.
But I'm curious to know, what was your experience? What was your learning on each role that you have just described? And what's the thing, or what's the learning that you are applying today in your current role? That's the first one. And then I would move with the second one.
Got it. So what have I learned that I'm now applying?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's two things, because one of the caveats of my coaching experience is that I've only done it in a pandemic. So I started this role, we coached for about 3 months, and then we went home. And so what I quickly learned was the human aspect of coaching has to come first, and the transformation and what the company wants has to come second. And I firmly believe that. And so it's about the person, and then what you can do, what I talk about with transforming. So I have an agenda that the company has given me, right? This isn't the person gets to do whatever they want. There are a core set of criteria that I'm trying to get them to. How do you scale agile and get them to scale agile? How do you become a leader that directs and doesn't, or that doesn't direct and serve? And so there's core things that I'm required to pull them towards, but their journey is their own. And there's nothing I can do about where they decide to go with that. So I can give them the information that they didn't have before, and it's up for them to kind of pull it through. And the aspect of the human comes first. So when we, when we came home during the pandemic, there was this concept that we were just going to keep transforming people. And I had a talk with, the organization, and using psychology again as kind of the backdrop, that there is no transforming right now. Like, their brains are in flight or fight. They're figuring out how to survive. They got dropped into something. I can support them with the way we modernize things. So we did a lot of how do you go virtual? How do you modernize not being in the office? But I did not ask them to behave differently. I didn't ask them to have their best behavior. There was a lot of forgiveness for bad behavior because they were under stress and their brain couldn't really figure out different things. And so I think that was like a really powerful learning at the beginning, to truly think about the experience of that one person and where they are, and really be cognizant of that and give them the permission to decide whether to transform or not, while trying to motivate them obviously to do it. And I think that is the way I use that now is I actually do a lot of workshops on well-being, just because I love the topic anyway, and I got really passionate about it during the pandemic, and using what I know to help people as much as I can. So I did a lot of research in positive psychology and well-being in the workplace, and have developed multiple workshops about that, so that I can help them think about, okay, not just getting the job done, but what is that whole human experience, and how do you make sure that that is enjoyable as well?
Great, thank you for that.
Yeah.
So, the second question may be related. with one of the things that you said already. And when, I mean, you share that you are at the present moment, you are experiencing like two different transformations. So how do you manage to carry on those two at the same time? Mm-hmm. I mean, I will leave it.
Yeah. So
that's
so
my team. To you. Yes. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's a good question. So my team handles the transformation that modernizes the way they work, think, and lead. And then there's actually another team reporting in for the same organization that's in charge of discipline upskilling. And so at the beginning, we actually were very separate, but we had to be cognizant of the organization's priorities. So in year one, modernizing the way we work was the priority. It was all about activation and how do you do a stand up and how do you do these agile things and how do you form a scrum pod and things like that. So the discipline learning was actually second. The second year, the discipline learning became the priority and the way that they worked became second. So we just had to make sure that we were asking the organization for the right amount of time and being cognizant of their other needs as it related to the employees' learning. This year, what we're trying to do is how do we collapse that idea? So we've been modernizing the way we work for 3 years. Some of it is done and is not new ways of working anymore. So those things become part of just upskilling and just the way we work. So now that we've gotten into this third year, I'm actually what we call making a three-legged stool. One is onboarding and how do we truly just think this is the way that we work? The second one is upskilling. And then the third way is this ways of working stuff. And we're being very specific about what we shift into just upskilling because we consider it the way they work. And we just have to tell new hires and new people coming into the organization, this is the way we work. And so it's kind of an evolution of how the two transformations work together. And it even, I would say there's even a third layer with it, with the, you know, I think you guys have heard, I know at least in America, we're doing the great attrition where people are moving mm-hmm. jobs all over. So now that has actually caused us to stop prioritizing upskilling and really truly think about onboarding as this rotation of employees are coming at a different clip. So those kind of, we just kind of, from a learning and development standpoint, right? We just have to think about holistically what we are asking people to learn and do differently and kind of get into as part of their experience as employees here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that will be my next question right now. How do you define, because we talked with Lashmi, these kind of things in the past. How do you handle, I mean, in your experience, what the people need to learn versus what the people want to learn?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I'm clear with the question. How do you define that? How do you manage that?
So I'm going to answer it a different way. Okay. I believe my job is to get people to want to learn what they have to learn. So in my experience, they all have too much work to do. And learning is not a priority no matter what. In theory, it is, right? Everyone says they like to learn. But when you have 1 hour that's free and you have 18 to-dos and you have one thing you're supposed to learn, you're going to do the 18 to-dos. So from a transformation perspective, we're not good at figuring out how much work there is and how to prioritize yet. So things like learning comes off the table already. So my job is actually to help the organization understand what they want to learn and kind of guide them there. And so a lot of that comes in as a persuasion and influence tactics. And I can give you an example. There's a organization that's going to go through a reorganization. So from an operating model perspective, on my team, we have an OKR, an objective and key result, that says all
I'm
of
sorry.
The organization.
Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but the cat is here. Oh. I'm sorry it's about fine. That. My apologies.
No. So we have a goal on our side that says all of the organization has to have a problem-solving culture and a system that gets it from one person all the way up to leadership. So that's what one of the things that we're trying to create from a system perspective. So the coach in the department, I had said to him, there's no way that they're going to want to do this in the middle of an org change. It's not going to happen. So what we're doing is we're saying during your org change, you're going to need a way to collect employee feedback so that you know the operating model works or not. And we have a system that can easily help you do that. And it becomes a goal about what they need, not a goal about the transformation and what's expected. And so, again, I alluded to in the beginning how I really pull on all pieces of my career in the coaching circumstance. Excuse me, sorry. So bad for a podcast. Let me just call.
It's okay.
It's too early in the morning. And we have allergies in we have spring allergies everywhere here. So what I pull on, I think, a lot from this perspective is marketing, right? How do I get people aware of the product I want them to use? In this circumstance, it's a problem-solving system. And then consider it. What's the why for them? This will help you know if what you thought was right. If you thought this operating was right, we will find out through the collection of problems. And then actually get to use it and kind of purchase what we're talking about. So they're going to now, so back to your question, right? Learning mm-hmm. versus what we want them to learn versus what they want to learn. It's all about connecting those two ideas and making sure they know why they want to learn something. And it doesn't, and again, it's not my agenda. It's their organization's agenda. I just have tools that help them achieve what they want to achieve. And if you can position it like that, you get a lot more done than this is what you want, this is what I want, how can we rectify it? We always center back to what they want with the tools that we have. And that's how we kind of get that done.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Straight to the point. But that's good. Okay. In fact, I never seen it that way. So yes, that's great thing. Thank you. So my other question is related with other things you said before, the human centric design or approach. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. It's actually something really fun. So we have had human-centered design at my company for a while, right? So we work in marketing. We have creative teams. We have a bunch of different types of designers. And so the concept of human-centered design has been around, you know, we have designers who have masters in it. But what happened over the years is it really became about the facilitation techniques of human-centered design through the LUMA Institute, if you guys are familiar with that. So if everybody's headspace was actually more around how do you use human-centered design to facilitate group activities so that the human is at the center of that group activity. And the human in that circumstance can be the employees, the business, sales, et cetera, and the customer and the client and the prospect, like all the traditional ones, but it can be really any human at that center. What we've tried to do is take a step back as part of the transformation efforts and talk about the highest level of human-centered design. how do you design so that it's viable, feasible, and I'm gonna forget the third one. Viable, feasible, and really kind of realistic. And I forget the word, but basically, is it viable? So can we make it? So, oh, desirable, that's it. So from a client perspective, is it desirable? Do they want it, right? No one wants, I don't know, no one wants oil right now, for example, right? They want green energy. So to begin making oil right now would probably be a mistake. Two, is it feasible? We're a finance company. If clients love bubblegum and they want bubblegum, we're still not going to make bubblegum because we're a finance company. We don't do that. So that's number two. And number three, is it viable? Is it going to actually make us money? So in our example as a company, the concept of advice, clients wanted it. We can make it, but it was too expensive for us to actually make with humans and have it be the 100% done by humans. When technology got to a place, it's called robo-advice, it's called AI, you can put blockchain, all those kind of technologies came into place. And we were able to build a technology solution to scale giving advice to the masses. That's when all three components of human-centered design actually occurred. And so as part of the transformation, we like the organization to think about what it truly means to be at the center of human-centered design, that the clients want it, that we can make it very well, and then the business aspect of it, that we can actually make money off of it. So that's where we, like, I focused, because again, from a design perspective, we really had a good core anyway. I haven't had to really dig in and pull that one through as much.
Okay. So when it's come to coaching in that specific area, mm-hmm. how do you play the roles with different hats, not just coaching, but mentoring or maybe advisory as well?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I can answer for human-centered design. It's usually done two ways. It's usually that talk track I just gave, which is more about teaching, because they don't have that in their brain yet. So it is straight, here is the theory. Okay, now let's kind of talk about it. And the other way we use human-centered design is the facilitation techniques. So how do we use it as coaches to, I think it's still gonna fall under teach, but more about that neutral facilitation. So how do we use the facilitation techniques within human-centered design to pull out the information? So I would say neutral facilitator is the hat there. But we don't do, I can probably share a little bit more about Agile as it relates to the different hats, because we don't really do that much with human-centered design yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have another question, but let me,
sure,
if you want to ask first, please feel free.
No,
because I will ask Diana. I will keep back.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So Diana, how do you combine, because you share with us that is agile, I will say keywords, agile, the scrum band, OKRs, the human-centric design, and coaching as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you combine all of that, it's just one scenario. What can you share with us from the learning perspective, as well as the human experience?
Mm-hmm.
When you go through all those process all together.
Oh, that's a tough question. What have I learned? And I think from a coaching perspective is that you really have to pull on every skill to get a transformation done. So if you think about at the core of it, right, is there are topics and ways of working that my organization does not know. And so at the very core, my mission is to modernize the way we work, we think, and we lead. And I don't care which discipline it comes from. And I am a little bit different than my peers with this, because there's an organization that sits at the center of this at the holistic level. And so they have said, here's your set criteria, like of what you're going to do. And what we have done is taken a step back and say, this is our mission statement. Anything goes. Did it modernize the way that they worked? Did it modernize the way that they thought? Did it modernize? I don't really care. Like if it's X, Y, or Z, my goal is to modernize the way that we do things. And so I have pulled in things that didn't come from this organization because it's a better fit for mine. And it's kind of a hub and spoke model. So how do I kind of think through all these things? No, I don't know if I have a good answer for that. So I'm kind of random. I would say one of the things we do is we really think hard about the OKRs. So it's not about teaching them about OKRs at this point. We've had them for a while. It's about achieving their OKRs. And so what we systematically do is we have a set of OKRs from a transformation perspective. This year, it includes things like setting up a problem-solving culture. The leaders specifically are leading with new mindsets and ways of working, and their headspace is in the right place, because ultimately it's going to, you know, as the transformation winds down, it's up to them to be the lead and be the change and things like that. We have scaled agile as a big one because we started at the non-scaled and now it's time to scale. And then we have some about our group. And then from a straight brass tacks, we have to prove that we're creating value. And so how do we prove that we're creating value? Well, there's four sources of value that a transformation can do of this type. We can do efficiency. So by using lean, we can get rid of waste. Things get done faster. Mm-hmm. We can do productivity. So as you get faster, you make more things. We can do employee engagement. As things get easier and impediments and things they don't like gets out of the way, we also focus on psychological safety and team kind of dynamics and that kind of stuff. The idea that high performing teams have a really good environment. So you can add value back by engagement, which leads to less people leaving, which leads to more work getting done and all that good stuff. And then you can do client outcomes. So you have all these things, things are faster, you get more out, employees are happier, things are kind of flying through that. What you've achieved with your clients have become better. And at the end of the day, that's the most important thing we're trying to do, is how do we get client outcomes better by modernizing the way that we work, we think, and we lead. So with that in mind, those are our OKRs. And then because we work for marketing, there's a set of OKRs. Their OKRs are how the business achieves their goals, right? Because OKRs cascade all the way up. And ours mm-hmm. actually at our organization, they really do. So I have a set of OKRs about how to do transformation stuff. Marketing has a set of OKRs about how they're going to get the business is whether it's gain awareness, consideration, get them leads that are qualified if it's a sales organization. And then the business has goals. And so the goals of the business actually, at the highest level, the company has 5 main goals, and you can actually track all the way through. And so when I think about all these disciplines and all these avenues, to go back to your question, right? Like, how do I focus in? We know that in order for these goals to happen up through the marketing organization all the way to the enterprise, our goals have to get done. And then it just becomes our job. Again, kind of, there's kind of a theme approaching this podcast. How do we get them to see, in order to achieve their goals, our goals are the way to do it. And so that's, again, it's all about persuasion and influence. How do I pick what we focus on? It really depends on what the marketing organization needs to achieve their goals. And so it can be we have very high level OKRs, but also we're facing a lot of well-being topics right now. And again, if you're not well-being, so we went through a pandemic, we're coming out here, right? So it's becoming an endemic. We're going back into the office. There's a huge learning curve. There's a lot of emotions tied to it. So my focus this month is none, it's not even OKR related, it's well-being. So I just created one workshop for leaders that says burnout, the definition of burnout is a lack of control when there's too much to do. And so let's talk about that from a leader perspective. What does it feel like when you're not in control of your, of what you're supposed to produce as a team? And as an employee, what does it feel like when you're not in control? Because decision-making's been taken from you. And how do we rectify these two things? How do we give employees the right amount of decision-making? And how do we keep the leaders feeling like they have the right amount of decision-making so that well-being from an autonomy and alignment perspective can get reduced? And that's the hypothesis I'm taking and doing workshops on and following up. And I'm also doing a workshop about boundaries. So as we come back to work, we need boundaries. We need to know when we leave work. We need to know how far we sit from each other when we're physical. We need to be comfortable with how we set up our lives as we are dramatically changing them in a different way. And we need to not just think about what we're going to do when that happens. We also firmly have to think about what we're not going to do to keep our sanity as we go into this next phase. So I'm doing, again, a huge workshop for, it's about 600 people to really talk about, like, if you're going to do your well-being, like you're coming back to the office, you need to be very self-aware of what boundaries you're going to put in place so that you can bring your whole self when it's within the constraints of those boundaries. And so that's another thing I'm working on. So I want to go back to your question because I answer very long. I just want to make sure the listeners know what it was. Your question is, you have a lot of different topics, right? Like, how do you pick and choose? Mm-hmm. And it, to me, I firmly believe I only get to choose what this organization needs. If they don't need it themselves, they're not going to do it. Even if I spend all my time making the workshop, telling them why it's valuable, they need it to do their own jobs. And so it goes back to that idea of human experience. It's not completely altruistic, right? Like, I'm not bringing them a cup of tea and saying, don't worry about anything. I'm systematically saying, here's the things I need to accomplish. And here are the things they need to accomplish, either at a personal level, at a leadership level, at an employee group level, it doesn't matter what level, but here's how I can help them. And that's how I get my stuff sold. And so it really, it's not, again, it's not as friendly, I think, as it comes out, like, oh, it has to be for them all the time, client outcomes. No, it's a very systematic approach that says, they're not going to do what I want unless they need it, right? Like, you're not going to spend $100 on something that gives you nothing. And so people aren't going to spend time, right? That's the transaction I'm asking for. They're not going to spend time on things if they don't see that it benefits them. And so I'm very careful to make sure that I'm listening to my clients and giving them outcomes that they, it's almost like that human-centered design thing, right? They have to want it. They really do. If not, it falls out.
Okay. Okay. That led me thinking in about something, but we can share that, what my thoughts outside this podcast. I mean, based on that answer, so my question is for you in on a personal level, what is transformational coaching or what is to be or to participate in a transformation like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for me, transformation coaching, and I'm going to cough real quick. I'm going to put on mute so I can answer better than what I sound like.
It's okay.
All right. So for me, transformation is a very specific craft, because what it says is there things that the organization wants employees to change and leaders to change. And you have to kind of, what I talk about is like pull them through, right? So it's not where one-to-one kind of, I'll call professional coaching at that level, is really that person has decided, this is how I want to change. This is what I know about myself. This is the information I have. And it's a lot more inside that person's head. The key difference for transformation is that you have an empty spot in their head, because it's something they're not doing today. And you're required, right? So I get paid to put something that they don't know and get them to use it. And so to me, it's a cycle of how I call it a file cabinet. So Agile is a great example of this. We had no folder of Agile in our file cabinet at my organization. We did. IT used it, but in marketing, we really didn't. We were project-based. And so I had a very empty file at the beginning. And so we did things like, all right, I'm going to put in one piece of paper into this folder called stand-ups, and then we're going to practice them. And then I'm going to put the next piece of paper in that file. And then they had it in their brain, right? So then they had the information in their brain, and then they can see it and they can get better. But the key thing about transformation coaching is they didn't have that piece of paper to begin with. So it has to involve teaching what a new concept is, mentoring how to do it, and then going into a more neutral stance and pulling the information from them. But it's a cycle each time. So, another example I can give that's current is we are trying very hard to get marketing to scale. So we started with Scrum and Kanban, and we said I like to give the analogy of water. So we started making hydrogens and we started making oxygens, and they did good, right? We got pretty awesome hydrogens and oxygens. Now we want to make a molecule of water. So we did that. And so we have really nice molecules of water around marketing. Now's the time we really want to make a full glass of very clean, drinkable, amazing water. And that's what we want to achieve. And it's going to take a while to get there. But the impediment that I find is as they're doing things within the organization, like restructuring and rethinking how it's going to work, and all the good things you want to see out of an agile system, right? They're being transparent and they're inspecting and they're adapting. They're not calling it one and done. But they don't involve us in a conversation until it's too late. So right now we're trying to scale agile. They're redoing a lot of their operating systems. And so a conversation I just had on Friday was, can I please talk to you before you get too far down? I want to give you, right? So the teaching, the file cabinet piece of paper, I want to give you a couple key points about scaled agile so that when you are thinking about your organization, you have these to consider. And so that's the teaching. And my goal ultimately is to make sure that that door stays open. So when they're thinking, my scaled agile expert is at the table thinking with them. But I need that first. And that's filling the file cabinet of being a transformation coach. And then the next thing is they have it. So then you just probe them and you mentor. In my experience, this is something I've seen on the other side of the organization, because I have 5 discrete departments, and kind of connecting it that way. And then eventually it's into that neutral coaching. Okay, what are you observing? What are you inspecting? And how are you going to adapt it, and pulling it from them, because now they have it to do that. So, you know, when I think again, information coaching, it's about how do you kind of figure out where they are in their understanding of what you're trying to transform, and then pulling them through that one step at a time to make sure that they go along the journey with you.
Okay. So, let me see if I put it, this idea. How do you measure the impact?
Yep.
They have.
Yep. So we have something called the Operational Excellence mm-hmm. Index. It's from McKinsey. And mm-hmm. so annually, we actually, all of the organization goes through that. We track the transformation project at the holistic enterprise level through the OEI. We also, our OKRs actually type, that's the measurable result. So if we get leaders to lead correctly, we will see the OEI increase in one of the loops that it has. If we get the problem solving culture, that's actually tied to the action plan from the OEI itself. So that's our main way that we kind of measure and track process and know what our goals are from an organizational perspective. And then we do other check-ins. So quarterly, it's based on observations. We use something, it's called an LAI, and I don't even know what it stands for. And I don't know if it's from outside the company. I'm going to be a terrible, terrible person to interview right now. But there is a quarterly one that goes down into the local teams that the coaches run and kind of help that way. And it's piloting or kicking off a leadership assessment as part of that one as well. Because for us, data-driven decision-making is one of our core kind of principles that we want. And so we do want to make sure everything is tracked against data, not just, you know, just saying, oh, we're doing stuff. We're very specific about that. Yeah.
Okay, if we have time, we have mm-hmm. time. I'm checking. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm going back to the same question, because when working on a transformational process, the key data, or there are two kind of data. You have the one that you just described when it comes to getting or achieving the goals, whatever it is mm-hmm. on different levels. But mm-hmm. when it comes to people, how do you measure that impact, the results on a qualitative, if you want to.
On quality.
Yes, the quality of the impact of that transformation. How do you measure that, or how do you observe or evaluate that? I'm mm-hmm. kind of, my interest is in that part right now. I'm curious to know
the
that.
The people part?
Yes.
Yep, so we have a employee satisfaction. I don't know, we don't build it. I'm not sure who does. And it actually does have key questions on there. So I would say quality, you want quality from the human experience, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I would say we're still in the infancy of that. And I think it's very difficult right now because of pandemic, politics, you know, there's a lot going on in the world, right? There has been the entire 3 years I've done this for a living is not just little things, but like pretty significant big things happening all over the world right now. And so how do you pull that out of what you are doing? It's incredibly difficult. So we do have a, like in the employee survey that goes out, we do ask all of the employees to answer some specific key questions as it relates to the transformation, and then also as it relates to well-being. So I mentioned right now, my focus is on well-being as we're returning to work and making sure everyone kind of gets acclimated correctly. Correctly is a weird word, gets acclimated easily for them. There's no right way to acclimate. There is a well-being even in that survey. So at the end of the day, we are tracking, there's 5 initiatives that say we have 5 hypotheses if we increase well-being. And we think if they happen, this question will fluctuate and we will be able to say we did this. So it can't be 100% scientific because again, the world likes to throw us curveballs once a month for the past 3 years. But it does give us some way to measure what you're kind of saying about the quality of the human experience and making sure that we really do keep that at the forefront because you have to.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Leslie, do you want to add something? I think I have one more question, but
go ahead,
no,
Laura.
But please, if you
can. No, go ahead. That's fine. Go ahead.
Because okay. Diana, if you want to, of course, share with us in this process transformation. So, how did you feel in all that journey, and what is the best you can get of this, of that process, of that transformation? If you have to put it on one sentence,
me,
one small
me
sentence.
Me personally?
Yes, on a personal level.
Yeah. Actually, I think that's my favorite question you asked so far, because I love it at a personal. So if you go back to the very first like question of my career, I've worked at this company for almost 20 years. I love the people I work with. We have a really nice culture of being kind to one another and truly supportive at a personal level, but we didn't work well together. There was conflicts, there was process problems. The conflicts weren't solved because we were on a per project basis fundamentally. So you had an 8-week project and you didn't work with these people again. And so you didn't need to have personal conflict. You didn't need to have process conflict. You didn't need to remove impediments. You didn't need to get better. You just didn't. And I worked in that experience and there was some ugly stuff, right? Like nothing crazy, nothing that any other company doesn't go through. But what this transformation did, and specifically Scrum is where we started, is we said, nope, you're going to work with each other all the time. You're going to work on the same product and you're going to be responsible for the outcomes. And so what it happened was, is people had to improve because they were stuck with each other, right? It's like family, like you're still going to see them every day. You better work on your problems. Number two, right? So that is interpersonal problems, and that is the problems with the system. And I love that I get to bring these people information that helps them do that. So I love it. And I can't even, so that's my personal thing with this, is that I get to watch the organization that I ultimately grew up in, because again, 20 years, I'm not that old yet. I was, you know, to give my age, but I was 22 when I started at the company. So I grew up with these people and now I get to help them be happier, right? At the end of the day, because they're all conflict. They have a sense of self-worth because they are responsible and accountable for an outcome in a way that they didn't. They got to just hand it off and call it a day. And so their own personal value has increased. The value they get out of interactions have increased. The value they see about the end client has increased. And the accountability to, yes, I want to make this place better. The transformation has given them this empowerment that they did not have before. And their own, your own journey. And so it's my absolute pleasure. And I am so grateful. And the leaders I work with, I think, again, one of the reasons I get a lot done is because they know my heart. Is really where all this stuff starts. It's not with, oh, here's a process, here's lean, here's these technical things. But I get such straight joy out of watching this organization become better for the people and the outcomes. And I also would say I work for an amazing company that truly does put the client first. And I know a lot of companies say that out loud. But the way that our business is structured, we don't have a choice but to put it. We don't have stockholders. People don't own us. It's a very specific ownership structure that every decision has to be about the client or the employee. And that's it. No one else matters. And to help that and help that kind of grow. So again, client outcomes and employee engagement are the two things we're modernizing in order to achieve. It is just, again, you can tell my voice has changed. You guys are coaches, right? My voice has changed. I'm all animated. I'm like, shoot, there's not enough time for really. I love it. That's my personal kind of motivation. And again, I think I get a lot done because everyone that works with me knows that I'm in it for that and not, it has nothing to do with me or what, you know, the transformation is supposed to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. You were very passionate about that.
I am so passionate. I was like, oh yes, I am. I do. I think it's one of the best opportunities in life to improve, not even just at the individual level, but the system level, which is what a transformation does, right? Who gets that opportunity? So I really do. I'm so grateful for this job.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah.
So, I think, I don't know, Lakshmi, if you want, because I ask a lot of questions to Diana too. I maybe.
No, that's okay. I think we have to be mindful about the time too. So it's just 3 minutes left and yeah, that's okay.
Okay. So we are closing this episode. I have learned a lot of things about you, Diana, that I didn't know. thank you so much for sharing your experience with us.
And again, thanks for inviting me.
It has been great. And if you have to summarize this episode right now, this experience, what will you say?
Well, I think I
feel free to say whatever's come to mind.
No, I was gonna say, I think I learned about myself too that I didn't know. I think the questions were really, I love the questions that you asked, and you know, for those listening, I hope that they get a couple of things out of it that they would want, and you know, happy to chat more if it makes sense.
Okay. Thank you so much, Diana. Lakshmi, thank you for being here too.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope to see you both soon.
Yes.
Thanks to everyone who makes these podcasts possible. In particular, thanks to the guest speakers and to you who are on the other side listening. If you liked it and were able to learn something new today, we invite you to share it with your entire network. We also invite you to subscribe to our different channels to follow our latest news. If you are interested in being part of these series, you can apply by clicking on the link that is in the general presentation of the podcast. Until next time.
Special thanks to the boys, Kashis Wadbani,